Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday. It's April 24th, 35 degrees and clouds here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Monday. Hope that your weekend was good. And for today, we are going to be looking at more unsettled weather in Park City. So the roller coaster continues, but as we get towards the end of this week, we'll kind of level things out. We could be talking about some calmer weather. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. So this morning, a little bit on the chilly side in Park City. We have a decent amount of clouds around, but the clouds will continue to increase as we go from this morning into the afternoon because we have a cold that's approaching from the northwest. And once we get into this afternoon, there will actually be a decent chance, about a 2 in 3 chance for scattered showers and even thunderstorms. That will include the Wasatch back. So that chance will be there, but with a daytime high climbing to 49 degrees, there's a decent chance that we're going to be talking about seeing straight rain in Park City with those showers coming in this afternoon. And then into tonight, the colder temperatures will start to move in. We'll still hold on to a pretty decent chance for wet weather, so still about a 2 in 3 chance tonight, but with that temperature eventually dropping to 27, what is likely going to be rain could transition over into snow. And with a daytime high only climbing to 41 for our Tuesday, it's more likely that we're going to see straight snow showers. So on Tuesday, the best chance for wet weather will be in the early portion of the day. And from overnight tonight through the first half of tomorrow, we could see some minor accumulations in Park City. So maybe the Tuesday morning commute could get a little bit slippery. But once we get into Tuesday afternoon, into Tuesday evening, the chance for wet weather will then begin to go down. High pressure will start to establish. So by Tuesday night, partly cloudy skies, that overnight low dropping back into the upper 20s. But then Wednesday, we're right back into the low 50s with mostly sunny skies. And that warm up is going to continue. It might be a little bit, I would say, level for Thursday and Friday, all for it to ramp up this upcoming weekend. But for Thursday, a high temperature of 56 degrees, mostly sunny skies. The overnight low by Thursday night in the middle 30s. Middle 50s again for our Friday, maybe a little bit more cloud coverage. But then for Saturday and Sunday, daytime highs low to mid 60s. Overnight lows will be in the upper 30s by that point. So if you've been wanting it to feel like spring, it won't necessarily feel like that for today, tonight, and for tomorrow. But by the end of the week, into this upcoming weekend, it will. And with temperatures in the 60s, should feel pretty nice this weekend. Of course, we just need to make sure that we're not warming up too fast with all the snow that we still have on the ground and up in our snowpack, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
And again, if you are thinking about headed into the backcountry, you can always go online to utahavalancheforecastcenter.org. They are issuing reports on an occasional basis. They basically have shut down for the winter. But just a reminder that during the spring, there are usually three different types of avalanche issues. One, wet snow, and that happens, of course, with the temperatures warming up. So wet, loose avalanches can create wet slab avalanches. Any new snow will create some instability as soft slab avalanches and loose dry avalanches. And anytime we've got wind blowing, creating wind slabs, these are soft or hard drifts of wind blown snow. Again, so know before you go and head out into the backcountry and be safe. It's 8:10 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be talking with National Geographic photographer and filmmaker Pete McBride. He'll be talking about his presentation happening at the Jim Sandy Auditorium tomorrow night. At this point, that is a sold-out event. Mountain Mediation Center Executive Director Gretchen Lee, along with Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang, previewing the film Stranger at the Gate, as well as a post-film panel. That's happening on Thursday at the Jim Santee Auditorium. And finally, Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff in with a monthly update, also taking a look at the winter visitation numbers. And stay tuned for Mountain Money coming up right after the local news hour. Today's guests are Michael Gilmore, highlighting valuable projects across the globe as part of this year's Money Awareness and Inclusion Awards. Then Peter DeConerney, professor of cinema and media studies at the University of Utah, walks us through what's at stake at the impending Hollywood writer's strike. Finally, Mountain Money spends some time with a representative from the Big Dipper, serving sandwiches from the historic Star Hotel on Upper Main Street. All of that, of course, coming up on Mountain Money, and you can hear Mountain Money every Monday morning between 9 and 10. Taking a look at some local news now, Dakota Pacific attorney Richard Burbage called Summit County a liar. As KPCW's Connor Thomas reports, the county tells a different story.
Summit County is in a legal fight with Dakota Pacific Real Estate over a proposed mixed-use development at Kimball Junction. But the party's attorneys are fighting a parallel battle in the court of public opinion, too. The county sued because it alleges Dakota Pacific lobbied state legislators to pass Senate Bill 84, which could allow the development on land zoned for a tech park. But the developer argues it didn't step outside the bounds of the normal process. Instead, it tells a story of being lured into a bad purchase by promises of development. At a court hearing Tuesday, the company's lawyer said the county asked Dakota Pacific to draw up plans for a mixed-use community, which would better utilize the mostly vacant space in Kimball Junction.
And so when it files a complaint claiming that the development agreement asks for and it wants a tech center, it is spreading an incredible lie with this community.
Some of county's attorneys didn't directly address that point, instead focusing on the legal matter at stake in the hearing. Their complaint does discuss the potential benefits of tech jobs diversifying the economy to lessen the negative impact climate change will have on ski tourism, but that's the evidence Dakota Pacific's attorneys point to when they say the county now wants a tech park. Dakota Pacific CEO Mark Stanworth feels like he's been the one who's been bait and switched.
We had multiple meetings with county staff who were being informed by county council. We had meetings directly with county council members. Talking about what they wanted for it.
But planning commissions are appointed bodies, beholden to development code. The code here is the Kimball Junction Neighborhood Plan. If a project conforms to the code, it can move along to the county council, whose elected officials always have the veto power. Alluding to that fact, Summit County Council Chair Roger Armstrong disputes Dakota Pacific's narrative, which asserts the developer was lied to. He said in a statement, quote, DPRE's arguments that its amended development plan for Kimball Junction was essentially pre-approved by the county due to the adoption of the Kimball Junction Neighborhood section of the general plan is patently false and predictably manipulative, end quote. Even Stanworth admits what changed things was the public pushback at the end of 2021 when the council heard his firm's proposal.
This furor can come off as fairly elitist, and I don't think that's the average Summit County individual. I think that, again, there's a faction who just has the ability to organize.
But he objects to the idea that the public pushback is exactly what caused Dakota Pacific to seek an insurance policy at the state level, SB 84.
There has been a lot of eyeballs on Summit County and on this project for quite some time. This is not something that just, you know, came up 3-6 months ago. They've been watching the way that the broader state issues are unfolding.
That broader state issue is the very real housing crisis, which Dakota Pacific has maintained it wants to help solve. County officials have countered that the ratio of affordable housing units is just not high enough to make a positive impact. That is, more commercial units and high-income residents will need workers to serve them. The developer says making anything more than 32.6% of the units affordable won't turn a profit. The two parties will face off again in court in June. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On Tuesday evening, the Park City Community Foundation's Climate Fund is hosting a sold-out event with National Geographic filmmaker and photographer Peter McBride. He joins me now on the phone along with Joel Zero, who is the CEO of the Community Foundation, here with me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Joel, why don't we start with you and just tell us a little bit about why the Community Foundation wanted to bring in Pete to speak to the community.
Sure. We thought it was a special opportunity for the relaunch of our climate fund. I saw Pete do his talk at the Mountain Towns 2030 conference, and it is just compelling. It is topical. It is hopeful. It is funny, and it's also a little scary.
Yeah. So, Pete, I mean, you're an award-winning National Geographic photographer, as I mentioned, a filmmaker. You've traveled the world from Mount Everest to Antarctica, documenting all of these expeditions. More recently, you have focused on protecting fresh water, especially the Colorado River. So maybe begin by telling us a bit about the work that you've done over the last, what, three decades?
I'll keep it tight. I started out as an adventure photographer, and then I quickly realized that a lot of the places I was doing adventure expeditions in were rapidly changing. Glaciers were melting, rivers were running dry. And so I came back and started looking at what I consider my backyard river, the Colorado, and ended up doing a project Source to Sea in every means of transportation possible. And was amazed to learn that that remarkable river that sustained seven states in the Southwest and parts of Mexico and drinking water for 40 million Americans, that river runs dry as well. It just creeps over the U.S.-Mexican border past the Morelos Dam and fizzles into nothing. And it used to be one of the largest desert estuaries in North America. And so I have since worked on that. I just came back from the Delta, where it's still dry despite the big snowpack. That we would need basically 6 years of this kind of snowpack to make up the deficit we're in. So we got a ways to go, and I'm trying to raise the awareness on it.
Yeah, so I guess why specifically the Colorado River? As you said, it's certainly not America's longest river, but it is the most loved and litigated river.
Well, I would say that, in my opinion, the Colorado River is the front lines of climate change. Fresh water is really becoming the front lines. So to have this remarkable river system that supports so much of the Southwest, it also supports over 5 million acres of farmland, which 95% of our winter vegetables come from. So if you like eating salads, you are eating the Colorado River. And so to have this system being so strained and so stressed, I think is a foreshadow to what we're all going to be seeing with fresh water. And of course, I grew up on this river, so it's close to my heart and close to my home. So I think it's important we know this. Most people don't realize that 70% of our drinking water in the United States comes from rivers. We think it comes from the tap, and it just doesn't.
Wow. And I think I also heard in one of your presentations say that the Colorado River today only running at 50% of its traditional flow. Why is that?
Well, we've been in a drought, a two-decade-long drought. It's a dry period. It's been in 1,200 years. This snowpack will help a little bit. But the reservoirs, Lake Powell and Lake Mead, are at 22-23% full. Those are the largest reservoirs in the United States. And then the river also carries water over to the eastern side of the Continental Divide into the Mississippi watershed basin. So we're losing about half of a big chunk of the upper section of the river goes into the eastern side of Colorado, which that water never returns to the system. So that's why we're running the river at a deficit already a little bit. Then you add drought and climate change, a lot of straws on the system, and then you have a river that used to have the largest, like I said, desert estuary in North America down at the end is completely gone. And now all of that dryness and challenges are rippling upstream.
Yeah. You've also noted that the Colorado River provides, some $26 billion in basically just economic vitality, given the recreation that's created along and in the river, huh?
Well, it provides the number there is 20. The recreation industry built around the river, so that's rafting, fishing, picnicking, outdoor sports. That's $26 billion. But the river itself, in total, for if you include food production, agriculture, power generation, it's actually 17% of the United States GDP. So it is really the hardest working river, possibly if not the country in the world. And as you mentioned, it's most loved and litigated. It's, they say, water's for drinking, whiskey's for drinking, and water's for fighting.
Oh. Have we loved the river to death? Is that a problem here?
I think we have been in a situation where we're loving a lot of our landscapes to death. We've loved this river to death. We also we have a math problem. We base the allocation of this river was divvied up 100 years ago, and we based it on big, high 100-year record flows in the early 1900s. So when they divvied it up, they did a pretty good job, and they thought the river had much more water in the system than it does. And now we've learned that the river is much lower on average, and then only getting lower with the changing climate and hotter and drier patterns in the Southwest. But nobody wants to give up their water rights that they'd already secured. So we've basically over-allocated it as well, and that's really led to loving it to death, so to speak.
Yeah. So how do you think your work is making a difference in helping to protect the environment and to, educating us about climate change?
I just am hopeful. You never know how your work impacts people, but I think a lot of people just don't know what's happening. Most people, because we live in busy lives, busy world, that, you know, you can focus only so much in your region, and most people don't know what's happening downstream or upstream of where they live. And I've been trying to do this kind of this aerial kind of big picture perspective of the entire river, all 1,500 miles of it, and to show how stressed it is. And I think it's raising awareness, people that work on it. I've met engineers that have done huge diversions to Phoenix and so forth and Tucson. They had no idea the river ran dry. And so they've sort of changed their opinion on it. And of course, getting the next generation of students to realize how beautiful, how precious, but also how fragile this system is, and that we got to be mindful of water.
All right, so your presentation on Tuesday, will you be specifically focused then on the Colorado River? Or?
I will do a big chunk on the Colorado. I think that's a good way for people in the area to understand what's happening. But I'll include some other fun stories, some beautiful stories, some challenging stories from climate. I'll show little snippets of some of the wildlife stories I've done, from swimming with orca in the Arctic to working in Everest and working in parts of Africa. And I'll you know, make fun of myself and tell some jokes, too, to try to keep people engaged.
Yeah, well, and this next question, I'm sure it's a little bit like asking, you know, which child is your favorite. But of all of the photographs and images that you have taken over the decades, does any stand out personally for you?
That's a tough one. Yeah, there's a lot I love. But there is a moment that will stand out, and I will mention it, and that's when I first learned that the Colorado River runs dry, and I was kind of in this frothy, murky, messy water full of garbage and plastic bottles. And to think that that same river that carved the Grand Canyon and turned into that was a real eye-opener for me. So that was a real changer. I'll show some images, too, of impact loving a place to death in the Grand Canyon. I spent a year walking the entire length of the Grand Canyon, so some images there of what traffic patterns look like, of aerial visitation stuff that's somewhat alarming. So those two stand out.
Yeah. Anything in particular that you'd like us to kind of take away from your presentation?
I think hopefully people will come away with a little bit of sense of inspiration that nature and the systems that we rely on that sustain us are magical and beautiful, but they are very fragile. And they, when we ask too much of them, like we have with the Colorado River, they disappear. And so if we want to keep living our lifestyles in, you know, the American Southwest and in the mountains, we have to sustain the natural systems around it.
All right. So as I mentioned, the presentation is sold out at this point. Is there a waiting list for it?
There is a waiting list. We have 450 people signed up to come. I think it's kind of emblematic of the draw that Pete has, as well as an engaged community that cares about doing something around the climate.
Yeah, and also this morning, the Community Foundation's Climate Fund has made an announcement about how it's working to eliminate food waste in the Summit County landfill by 2030. I guess, how is it that you intend to make that happen?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The Climate Fund has been around since 2019, and we've been making grants to community-based organizations in the area doing really great work. We decided that we need to get focused on what is the impact of those grants. What do we want to make happen? So we talked to leading experts, and they said that the biggest impact we can make is on slowing down filling our landfill. Landfill releases methane into the atmosphere. It's the third largest producer of methane from humans, and methane is a huge capture of heat, you know, 84 times more than CO2. So we can divert 80% of what goes into our landfill is divertible, and the largest chunk of that is food waste. So we are going to have zero waste in our landfill, food waste, by 2030, and we're going to slow down it being filled up, which is going to be a huge savings to our community. It's going to make a big impact in the amount of methane, and it's the largest thing our community can do. So we're all in.
Okay, we'll be talking about a little bit more about that later on. Pete, anything else you'd like to tell us about the presentation Tuesday?
No, I'm just excited to see people and hope they come out with a little sense of adventure, and I'll share some of the, you know, the I've been lucky to see a lot of the parts of the world, and I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, the next generation, my nieces and nephew, can see it the same way I did, and a bunch of the next generation in your area. So it takes great steps like that, like reducing food waste, and of course, water is part of the system as well. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're looking forward to it as well. Pete McBride, thanks for your time, and Joel Zero as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
8:28 now. Good morning. Well, poor conditions plagued Vail's northeastern resorts this year. But as KPCW's Connor Thomas reports, Vail says that conditions there rebounded to end the season.
Vail Resorts released its season-to-date report Friday morning, showing more visitors and earnings than last season. The report compared numbers from the beginning of the season through April 16th, including revenue from season pass sales. During that time period, skier visits were up 6% this year over last year. Ticket revenue, including those season pass sales, was up 4%. Epic Pass prices rose from a discounted $783 in March of 2021 to $841 last year. Those are the starting prices on full-access non-local passes. This spring, full Epic Passes are going for $909 for the 2023-2024 season. What Vail calls ancillary businesses saw higher revenue increases. Ski school earnings were up 26%, and North American retail and rental earnings were up 22%. Dining was up 35%. CEO Kirsten Lynch attributed those numbers to a post-COVID rebound. Last year, some dining was closed and staffing limited by the pandemic. Regionally, Vail's Western resorts in Utah and Tahoe have been able to extend their seasons, although Lynch admitted some challenges in Tahoe after too much snow closed resorts there in March. And Lynch reported a rebound in the Northeast, where Vail was able to extend the ski season at resorts thanks to better conditions, like Hunter Mountain in New York and Mount Snow in Vermont. In previous earnings reports, the company had said visits and earnings were down in the region. Midwest and Mid-Atlantic resorts saw unseasonably warm weather the whole season, according to the report. Vail closed its resorts there early. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
It's 8:30. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, in collaboration with Mountain Mediation Center, Park City Film will be screening the short film Stranger at the Gate. In the studio with details, I have the Community Conversations Coordinator, Nicole Wozniak, with Mountain Mediation, and also the Executive Director of Park City Film, Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning. Good
Hi, Leslie.
So, Katie, maybe start and just tell us a little bit about the film. Tell us what it's about.
Sure. Yeah, so I got to see this film at Mountain Film in Telluride over Memorial Day weekend, and it just completely blew me away. I mean, it is just one of those films where it's a short film. It was shown as kind of a sequence of short films, and you could not wait to get to the end of these short films to talk to Mac McKinney, who's the main subject of it. So the premise, basically, is it's a film. It's a documentary about a former U.S. Marine who's Mac McKinney, who suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder and just has this kind of anger and hatred that is just consuming him. And kind of how he kind of actualizes that is he plans to blow up the mosque in his small Midwestern town. And he kind of is going through with this plan, and he meets the people that he's basically about to kill, and it completely changes the trajectory of his life and the kind of this whole community that he lives in. And it is just, it kind of sends chills down my back every time I think about it, but it's just so incredibly powerful. Malala Yousafzai is one of the producers on the film. She saw it and was like, this is one of those like life-changing moments that people need to know about. Ended up getting nominated for an Academy Award for Best Short Film Documentary. I mean, it is just transformative. And so to bring it to our community, it's something we've been working very hard on for the past year, and just seemed like the perfect complement to bring Mountain Mediation in as a partner to really not just show the film, and we'll have the Q&A with the director and Mac McKinney, which is amazing because they're both amazing people, but then to really just dig deeper into it after the film is something that we don't often get to do. And so we're really you're just looking forward to an incredible night on Thursday.
Yeah, so as a documentary, I mean, I guess, how is it that you see what changes his mind? It just seems to me that it would be like after the fact.
There's a little bit of recreation, mm-hmm. but it's you're interviewing him, certainly, and his family, and kind of how the story unfolds, like how he came to be in this position of, you know, kind of making this very radical decision, clearly, to blow up a mosque. And then the people who, you know, worship in the mosque, right? The Muslim community, what is their response? How did it unfold for them? What's their perspective? So that's kind of the beauty of the film too, is that you're seeing these multiple perspectives of family, Mac, the Muslim community, you know, the head of the mosque, and just how they, basically what they did when confronted with hate, their response was kindness. And just how powerful that can be when, I mean, in such extreme hatred, to do something so simple, seemingly, as just love, basically, and how transformative that can really be. And it just, it's such a message of hope.
Yeah, so how far did he get? I mean, how come he's not in jail?
That comes up in the movie. You'll have to watch. There are lots of those questions. Uh-huh. But it is a very tightly packed, very well done 30 minutes of just this story, very kind of concentrated information. Yeah.
So, Nicole, why was this a film that Mountain Mediation wanted to share with the community?
Yeah, this is actually the second film that we've worked with PC Film on. The first one was I Didn't See You There, which was a Sundance film that won Best Director. And I'll say that when I experienced the conversation that we had about that film, it changed the way that I engage in my daily life. And these are the conversations that Mountain Mediation Center is looking to have with our community and to bring community members together that may not agree on certain issues and may not have a chance to talk about some of these divisive topics, and to come to a safe space and have a chance to talk about them, hear what their neighbors think about these topics. And so we're really excited to be working alongside PC Film on this one. Within our mission statement, Mountain Mediation Center is really out there to prevent conflict, resolve disputes, and create an inclusive community. And we felt that this film was directly addressing those topics. And so we're really excited to be having this panel after the conversation with the director and Mac, and then also having a community conversation as well. Since it is a short film, we were able to fit everything into one night, so we're really excited about that. And just to discuss the power of being welcoming and feeling welcomed, and the power of a community itself, and vulnerability within your community.
All right, so as you mentioned, we're gonna have the film's director and Mac McKinney, what they're going to be via Zoom. We'll see that on the big screen.
Yeah, we'll come in via Zoom. So they'll be up on the Jumbotron, as it were, and they'll have the facilitated conversation there. So about 30 minutes for the film, about 30 minutes for the post-film conversation to really understand, get behind the scenes of, you know, how Josh came to tell this story. And then when you listen to Mac, I mean, he is such an incredibly just powerful speaker, just kind of the humanity that he realized through this experience and how he wants to pay it forward is pretty impressive. So then after that, we'll have a little break, some Auntie M's cookies, so there's a little incentive to stay, and then we'll have small group conversations with Mountain Mediation. And I should say this is part of our Raising Voices film series, as was I Didn't See You There. And it's really a new program for us where we're always looking at these conversations. Many people have come to Park City Film and had that post-film conversation. You'll know that people stay afterwards. The conversation ends, the panel discussion ends, and then people just stay and they want to keep talking. And so we're like, how do we capture that? How do we capitalize on that and take that a little bit deeper? So Raising Voices is in part about that, and also about representing communities and cultures that are traditionally, historically not represented on the screen. The Muslim community is, you know, often marginalized, right? Like anti-Muslim sentiment. We don't talk about religion very much, right? And hatred. It's like we try to focus on happier topics generally in the populace. But that's really what the Raising Voices series is about, and to be able to just take it to that next level where we have this opportunity with a short film that people can spend 2 hours together, right? That's not an unreasonable expectation, but what can we pack into it? How do we get some different angles on it where you can get to that next level? Or what do you take home with you? How do you engage with our community maybe in a different way after what you've seen and what you've heard from your neighbors and fellow community members?
Yeah, so again, we're gonna have this community conversations, what Mountain Mediation has been doing now for several years. Mm-hmm. That those groups then will be formed after the break.
Yeah.
Okay. And what, you guys just decide who goes where?
Yeah. So we have a bunch of trained facilitators who will split everyone into small groups just to make those conversations a little more intimate and make sure everyone has a chance to speak their piece. And we've formulated questions that we're also open to doing it on the fly if there's something that it seems like is really being focused on in the audience element of the Q&A. So we're prepared to take whatever comes, but we do have prepared questions, and we'll just break up into small groups and converse.
Yeah, what are some of those themes, though, that you're hoping that get brought out during those post-film discussions?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is definitely community and just how the community has a power to make difference in people's lives and the impact of being welcoming and how just with, like, you don't want to spoil exactly what the film ends up being about, but how one moment can completely change the trajectory of someone's life and how we work towards creating those small moments and if it's possible, as well as, I guess, whether people feel the ability to be vulnerable in the community that they're in or if that's not a possibility for them, depending on how they identify and other things like that.
Okay. Katie, this is one of the few films that Park City Film presents with what you call open captions. Basically, these are just subtitles that are put into the film.
Yes, that are in English so that it will be accessible to people that are deaf or hard of hearing. We'll also have an ASL interpreter for the panel discussion and for the small groups. So if we do have any deaf community members that are hard of hearing, definitely want to welcome into the community. Mostly we have closed captions, but when they're not available, we do open captions. That's the other alternative. And it just basically makes it more accessible to more members of our community. That's important to us for these conversations, particularly with Raising Voices, to make sure that as many members of our community are able to access this information and do it as a collective. I mean, that is the power of film exhibition, right, is to have everyone together with this collective experience for the film. I do want to say it is a free screening at 7 o'clock on Thursday night. So we are asking people to register in advance if they can, because it's always nice to know who's coming, but absolutely just show up if you have a change of plans. We'd love to have you join us. It's going to be a pretty amazing evening.
Okay, and Nicole, you guys have worked hard to make these community conversations bilingual, at least Spanish and English. Will you be doing that again?
With this film, because we could not make the film and with captions in Spanish, it is not necessarily bilingual, but if someone comes who speaks Spanish, usually there is an MMC member who does speak Spanish and can help with translations if that occurs. So please reach out to PC Film. When you go to register at the PC Film website, you can put in information there if you are Spanish-speaking and need translation.
Yeah, I would say in our registration form, it does ask if you need any accommodation. So please let us know through that forum. So I just want to thank our sponsors, the Park City Municipal Corp and Park City Chamber, who underwrite the Raising Voices film series. And so I appreciate their support in helping to make all this happen. It's a lot of moving parts for these different experiences that we're trying to create. And we hope that it's successful and that we can do it again with Mountain Mediation.
Okay. Jim Santee Auditorium, Thursday. When does the film start?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Yep. Okay.
And then parkcityfilm.org, if you want to check out the trailer, certainly register for the film, see what other details we have going on. But
all right, anything else?
We hope the community comes out. It will blow your mind. Yeah. It is unbelievable, and we're so excited to have Josh and Mac join us because they are just incredible speakers, and just their story, to hear it from them. It's one thing to see it in the film, but to hear it from them in their own words is transformative.
Yeah,
it
sounds like they're just kind of doing that a lot then with public screenings and of the film.
Right? Absolutely. They've been very, very supportive. Yeah. And Mac has his own, he came out to Mountain Film and just, when hung out and just kind of talked to people. He's just such an unbelievably generous person.
Okay. Katie Wang and Nicole Wozniak, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's 8:43. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, while we had record-breaking snowfall this year, did that translate into a record number of visitors to Park City? In the studio to help us answer that, I have the CEO of the Park City Chamber and Visitor Center, Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for getting here. Something I wanted just to kind of hash out with you. The lodging numbers that you're reporting for the month of March show that we're down, 5% from the same time last year?
That's correct.
Yeah, and how do we calculate that? Because I want to kind of spin back to last week when Mike Lures reported that the flush index, which is how the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District determines the number of people in town, shows that there was almost a 19% increase over March 2022.
I know, and you know what? This is the first time that Mike's flush index and our occupancy occupancy numbers weren't necessarily in alignment. Generally, the numbers that we report and the numbers that he reports are within points of each other. So when we heard that report, we thought, gosh, I think we need to go back and reconcile and see maybe what that difference is for March. I'm not sure. I was really quite surprised that his numbers were reporting such an increase in visitation when our occupancy really showed down 5%. So on average, about 64% occupancy. And our numbers, so we use our numbers really truly as a trend line because it's not an absolute number. It only represents about 2,600 units out of the total about 5,600 units. So it's about, it's a little less than 50% of the total lodging. So we generally look at it as, are we trending up? Are we trending down? What are our rates doing? And we use it really more as a trend line than an absolute. One of the things that we really look at as key performance indicators are those tax collections, and then also the TRT, the local sales tax, the restaurant tax, the wrap tax, all of those taxes. How are our visitors spending, not necessarily the total occupancy number?
Do your unit counts, though, include the Airbnbs or the VRBOs, or is it just standard lodging facilities?
It includes both. You know, I think what's interesting and unique about the Park City market is that many of our condominiumized properties will utilize all of the marketing mediums and platforms available to promote their properties. So Park City Lodging is part of our reporting, along with more traditional properties as well, like Pendry, Montage, Yotel Pad, Stein Erickson, those sorts of traditional properties. But we do have a really good mix of properties reporting, and we're always looking at growing that as well. There is a fee to participate, and it really gives the lodging properties too some great insight in terms of how they're performing against their comp set. So it's very much a standard in the industry to utilize a tool like Destrometrics or Intopia to really gauge your performance in general.
Yeah. So in addition, though, the daily rate continues to go up about 5% over this time last year. So what is that daily rate at?
Right now for March, the daily rate was just under about $850 a night, which, as you said, is up 5% versus the occupancy, which is down about 5%. And, you know, when we think about sustainable tourism, we think about this concept of quality visitation over quantity visitation. So looking for a visitor who will stay longer, spend more, and maybe be in better alignment with our values as a community related to sustainable tourism and using transit and lessening their impact on the environment and also our quality of life. So, you know, in looking at the occupancy and average daily rates, we're really in alignment with the direction we want to go to create and build Park City as a sustainable tourism destination. You know, looking forward, we're really excited about April. You know, having an extended season is really going to help our occupancy compared. I mean, right now, and my numbers are only as of the end of March, we're up just about 1.5% of occupancy. Rates are still up, but here's the interesting story. When you look at average daily rates for March, we just talked about $850. You're looking at April average daily rates at about half that. So we really have this tremendous fluctuation in our tourism economy with peaks and valleys. And it's one of the things that we're really trying to understand is when do we have that respite as a community to be able to rejuvenate and rest and then get ready again for the summer season. Although I think mountain communities across the West are looking at the summer with some uncertainty. The booking pace is significantly slow for this upcoming June and July. So we're wondering about that uncertainty. We're looking at rates and keeping our fingers crossed that we have a strong summer season. I can't believe we're thinking about summer already and our ski resorts aren't even closed yet.
Would that make a difference? I mean, if we used a median daily rate as opposed to an average daily rate? I'm just curious. I mean, because that 850 seems like a lot to me.
That's not a typical way to do it, and I'm not even sure if I have access to that sort of information. You know, I think the rates are important to think about, but we're only representing about 50% of the properties. We would like to get some more economy properties in the mix to be able to get a better idea of that average rate. But I mean, when you look at the tax collections, we're very interested in that. We have March collections from the county available to us, which really represents only November, December, and January performance. So we don't yet quite have February and March performance yet. But all of our tourism-related taxes, tax categories are up. Our local sales taxes are up 7%. Our TRT, which is that transient room tax, that lodging tax, is up 3%. Restaurants are booming, that tax collection up 21%, and recreation, arts, and parks up 8%. So these are really positive numbers for our economy and for our community, and we're really excited. I mean, I think when you look at the way that the city, the county managed tourism over this season, when you look at elevated and enhanced services related to transit, and transportation and infrastructure management, the affordable housing that opened at Slopeside. I'm really proud to say that I think Park City won the winter.
Let's move on. I had Sustainable Tourism Director from the Chamber, Morgan Mingle, on a few weeks ago telling us about the Sustainable Tourism Grant. But that deadline is coming up to apply?
It is. Applications are now open and they will close this Friday, April 28th. Applicants may request up to $30,000 for their projects, and we're really looking for some creativity and some innovation from our nonprofit partners and our members to really think about how can they embrace the sustainable tourism plan, how can they look at ways to mitigate impacts to the environment and also to our residents. So we're really excited to see what we get with that grant program.
How many applications have you received so far?
Right now, we have about 10 in the hopper and with a week to go. So I'm wondering if maybe I'm assuming we'll get quite a few more just right at the deadline.
Yeah. So when do you determine who gets what?
There is a committee. We had an application process for the committee. Our board of directors will approve that grant selection committee at their meeting tomorrow. And then I'm pretty sure that committee is going to want to hit the ground running, mostly because we want to evaluate the scores on that and the amount of funding that we would like to provide so we can plug that into our upcoming budget that will be approved by our board in June.
Yeah, so what is that? I mean, there's got to be a maximum, I'm guessing.
Last year, you know, we've always had what we called an events grant, and that events grant was really focused on driving overnight visitation, particularly at times when we needed the business. We've slowly been shifting that very traditional events grant, which was really about visitor attraction and marketing, to more of a sustainable approach. So we're slowly shifting that to this new grant this year. And last year, our sustainable tourism events grant had about $300,000 in the pot for that.
Okay, and so you're anticipating about that?
I'm thinking it'll be about the same.
All right, and up to $30,000 for one project.
That's right.
Yeah, wow. Yeah,
significant.
You said the committee will decide who gets what, and then grant recipients should expect to see money when?
In July. We're hoping, you know, this will be part of our FY24 budget, so we're on a fiscal year budget that runs July through June. So we'll get those funds approved in our budget in June, and then we'll award those grants in July. And, you know, depending on the cadence of the need, how soon those will go out. Some may not need those funds until December, in which case we, you know, may delay that payment, but it'll be on a case-by-case basis, and we're really excited to see what the community comes up with. You know, there's such a feeling and desire for our community to be more sustainable in all aspects of, you know, just listening to Joel on the segment earlier about moving towards composting. And, you know, this is such a, the sustainable tourism plan is such a strong tool for the Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau and the business community to really get behind a lot of these initiatives that are in alignment with that sustainable tourism plan. So it's really great to see all the collaboration and partnership and innovation happening in this community.
All right, coming up May 22nd is the annual Wasatch Back Economics Summit, a day-long event. This is happening at the Grand Summit Hotel this year. Registration is open now?
Registration's open now. We are anticipating that this event will sell out. It's room for 350 people. We've already seen significant registrations and sponsorship come in. This will be all day from 8 a.m. to 3:45, and this is really a great time for the region to come together, where we don't think about jurisdictional boundaries or county boundaries, and we work together with Heber City, Wasatch County, Summit County, Park City, and we have such a great lineup, including some incredible keynote speakers. We have Robert Spendlove with Zions Bank. They're a great sponsor of ours. They're presenting this event for us this year. He'll be doing an overview of the current economic conditions and really look ahead at the challenges and opportunities of the future. Then we'll also have Sam Beard, who will be our lunch keynote speaker. He's the founder of the Jefferson Awards and Gift Connect, and he's going to discuss the power of collaboration and also his focus on the 0 to 5 initiative and how important it is to work with our children in that age range for the economic impact, of course, the social and cultural impact too, but his numbers related to if we can get our 0 to 5, we can get our readers to a third grade level, how that will have a tremendous economic impact on our community. And just some great breakouts. We'll be talking about workforce development and retention, water conservation and its economic impact. Of course, transportation, economic impact, affordable housing, trails, open space. We have just so many great topics. We can't wait to dive a little bit deeper into those with you maybe on our next segment, and look forward to welcoming the community. For more information, your listeners can go to WasatchBackEconomicSummit.com to sign up.
Okay. Is the schedule at this point, you got the lineup or?
We do. Yeah, we have everything lined up. We're just working on some final details now with the panelists. I'm really looking forward to the Wasatch Back Elected Officials panel, where we have the opportunity to talk with the elected officials from both counties and cities across the back. It's just going to be a really great event. One of the things that we heard last year when we hosted the event at the Zermatt was that the participants wanted more time to engage, more time to ask questions of the panelists rather than just having presentations. So we're making sure that we're building in longer breakout sessions to be able to allow more interaction. And then at the end of the day, we'll also have a reception and networking mixer with a trade show style booth so that we can get to know the businesses in the Wasatch Back as well.
All right. Wanted to ask you about this. I know that the Chamber had issued a seasonal employee survey. The deadline was April 14th, basically to better understand and improve the seasonal worker experience in Park City. When do you think you'll have the results from that?
That was actually a survey that we shared that was sponsored by the city and Mayor Nan Seasonal Workforce Task Force that has been created. That group met and gave input to this survey, and I think the deadline has maybe already passed, and our next meeting with that seasonal workforce task force is in May. So we'll get a little bit more information there. We really want to better understand that experience that our seasonal workforce is having in our community. What can we do to further support them? What do they need in the community? And just get a better understanding of how we can support them.
All right. The first ever Park City Chamber Snow Day was held March 30th. Did you get a good turnout for this?
It was an incredible success. We were so happy to, you know, to put aside the economic reports and the keynote speakers and all of the professional development that we're so focused on and really just celebrate that Park City lifestyle that we all love so much. And it was just a beautiful day. It was a ton of powder out there that day, and I know our members had a great time. I think collectively we probably had about 150 people join us throughout that day, from the coffee in the morning to the reception in the evening, and Park City Mountain did an amazing job hosting us. We're incredibly grateful to them.
Okay, and just real quick, a couple of events you wanted to mention?
Our Park City Business University is coming up Wednesday, May 3rd. Great subject here with time management and productivity. Who doesn't need to improve on that? That'll be held from 11:30 to 1. That's a free program. You just need to go to parkcitychamber.com to register. And then we also have our Business After Hours Mixer. That's going to be held at the Premier Pet Lodge. That's going to be in Francis. We're working really hard to expand our reach and engage those businesses in Eastern Summit County. That'll be May 11th from 5 to 7. And then just one final note, our deadline for our board of directors election is coming up April 26th at 5 p.m. So we'll have 6 spaces available on our board of directors, and we invite any chamber member who's been a member for a year, who's an active member, to apply, and they can apply at visitparkcity.com/board.
Okay, Jennifer, see you next month. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Jennifer Wesselhoff is the CEO of the Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau. This is the KPCW Local News Hour.